copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for staying. Thank you for being here. I hope it turns out to be a very good time for you. Let me remind you of something that I shared with you in the pre-session, and that is there are three elements of leadership that are to be taken into consideration from a human perspective. There is personal development, where you grow as a leader. It's the leadership development. It's the growing into your potential. It's learning who you are. It's learning how to discipline yourself and focus yourself and motivate yourself when no one else is around and all those kind of things, which we talked about in the pre-forum. Then there's the technical, which is more the theological training, the technical side of any organization or business, the chemistry, the medicine, the technical side of things. And then thirdly, there is the organizational development. This is the building of and organizing of people into a team. This is the developing of the organization. A lot of people say, I like leading, I like being an effective leader, I like preaching, I like that, but don't ask me to build a team. Other people say, I'm technically good in Greek, but my marriage is all messed up. And so a part of what you're trying to do in life is balance growing into your personal development, growing into your personal potential, and learning how to work with people, building a team, and understanding the technical side, the Greek, the medicine, the engineering, the whatever, okay? So there are three aspects, and whenever you're choosing a staff member, a senior pastor, if you're a board member trying to choose a senior pastor, you're trying to choose a president, you're trying to choose a vice president to work with you long term, check all three of these, because they can be technically brilliant, but be really messed up personally. Their marriage can be a wreck or something. Or they can be technically perfect, personally perfect, and not work well with other people, not play well with other children. So you want to check all three. Well, today, our focus is going to be the organizational development side. It is going to be, how do you develop a team? How do you get a team in focus? How do you organize a team? How do you work with a team to build an organization, to build a church? How do you move a church from 50 to 500 or whatever? How do you take the organization from 3 people to 300 people? Or how do you grow the organizational side of things? Not technical, not personal. It's going to be organizational. Okay? It may, as I was thinking about it this morning, and there are a few just things I thought would be very helpful to you personally. And it has to do with time. A few time thoughts in terms of developing an organization. Ted Engstrom, who was the president of Youth for Christ for a period of time. He was a senior editor at Zondervan Publishing. He was the executive vice president and for a while the president of World Vision. Was one of my, the people that I worked with quite a bit back in the 70s. And Ted told me this, and I'll never forget it. It's helped me a lot of times. He said, a person tends to overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 5. Don't forget that. As you're building your organization, as you're getting your team together, you tend to think, boy, this year we can do this. And at the end of the year, you're sort of disappointed because it didn't all happen. But when you think 5 years ahead, and when you look back 5 years, you think, we couldn't have even imagined how far we've come. So you tend to overestimate what you can do in a year and underestimate what you can do in five. Another time dimension is that it takes you 4 years to get up to speed in any position. And it's always the same. The first year is orientation. It doesn't mean you won't hire people or fire people or raise money or have ministry or seek conversions your first year. But at the end of the first year, you're going to turn to your wife or husband and say, you know, I think I'm finally beginning to understand what's going on over there. I think I know what's happening now. You can't know that in 3 weeks or 3 months. Or 6 months, or 9 months. It takes a year to get oriented to any new position. Unfortunately, it's true even in the same organization. If you were the vice president and you become the president, the clock starts again. Because it takes you a whole year just to get oriented, reoriented to being the president instead of the vice president. People think of you different. They talk about you differently. They relate to you differently. Everything is different. The responsibilities are different. The scope is different. Everything is different as the president as compared to the vice president. So the first year is always orientation. Second year is experimentation. Once you know what you think you know what's going on, you think, well, hey, we should try this and this and this and this. The third year is evaluation. You say, we tried this, it didn't work at all. We thought it was going to be big and it turned out to be a failure. And everything you try is not going to succeed. Some things you think are just wonderful will fall flat on their face. Every person in the room has experienced it. Don't feel badly if everything you try doesn't succeed. So the third year is evaluation. And the fourth year is acceleration. It's the beginning of the fourth year when you think, you know what? Things are really beginning to take off. Now, they may grow the first year, but if you think they're growing the first year, wait till the fourth year, because it's a totally different thing. So that 4 years not only helps you keep perspective on where you are, it frankly keeps perspective on where, unfortunately, it keeps perspective on where your staff is. Because you want your staff to be all full bore 1 month into it. You want them to be accelerating 1 month into it. They're still getting the orientation. They don't even know which way the restroom is, hardly, at the end of a month. So be kind to yourself, but be understanding of your staff when they don't know everything you want them to know at the end of 1 month. Okay? So that's a four-year concept. I believe it takes about 10 years to get an organization founded properly. I believe that an organization, a church, a ministry, is in the startup phase for 10 years. At the end of 9 years, you can ask your team to sit down and make a list of the 10 things that we feel need to be in place for us to be considered a healthy, strong organization, and you can complete that list in 10 minutes. Your team will know exactly what you need to do yet to be even considered a healthy, strong organization at 9 years. I'm saying, don't be 3 years into it and be beating up on yourself because you aren't there yet. I'm saying you're not supposed to be. When you get to about the 10th year, doesn't mean you're going to have it all together, but you'll begin to sense a whole different strength in the organization. I'm saying, understand that it takes you 10 years to get something founded, not 10 days or 10 weeks or 10 months. Okay? So just relax. But ask yourself, what are the 10 things we need to do to feel like we're really where we want to be at the end of 10 years? Another time frame is 15 years. I've told many, many leaders, it takes 15 years to be an overnight sensation. Now, let me say that again. It takes 15 years to become an overnight sensation. For whatever reason, at about 15 years, people start saying, "Oh, have you heard of so-and-so? I think it's a new thing. I just heard about it." You know, and it's like everybody's heard about it. But it's, how long have you been going? About 15 years. And for whatever reason, in that 14th, 15th year, it just feels like all of a sudden everybody's beginning to be aware of us. And be prepared for a growth spurt in the 14th, 15th year in terms of public visibility and word of mouth. It just some way matures to the point where at about that 15th year, you become an overnight sensation in people's minds. Another time frame is 30 years. It will take you about 30 years to develop an organization, a ministry, a church that will go beyond the founder if the founder dies. It takes a while to really establish a ministry. I've seen a lot of ministries where the founder dies or leaves in 5 years or 10 years. There isn't enough critical mass. There isn't enough staff. There isn't enough budget. There isn't enough something to keep it together. It just sort of fizzles out. So I'm saying, if you're going to start a ministry, ask yourself, am I ready to give 30 years of my life to this? And then the last time frame I would tell you is have a 100-year dream. In other words, to say, what difference do we want this organization to be making way past our lifetimes? Our whole team, as we're looking at our whole team, what do we want to be here 100 years from now is a great retreat question for your team to wrestle with. Take 15 years until you get maybe 15 or 20 churches planted. You get a sort of a district going, a sort of momentum, a camp maybe in a this and this. It just takes a while to get it to where all of a sudden it seems like, hey, everybody wants to do this. Mm-hmm. All right, I just thought it would be helpful to have some of those time frames before we even get started in the main part of the day. Next, I'd like to distinguish for you between leadership and management. A lot of people ask, in America at least, am I a leader or am I a manager? Well, I'm a leader, not a manager. I'm a manager, not a leader. I say, actually, you have to be both. But they're different. They're not the same. Leadership and management are not the same, in my opinion. Let me show you. Leadership is directional. It is knowing what to do next, knowing why that's important, and knowing the appropriate resources to bring to bear on the need at hand. You remember I said leadership is knowing what to do next, knowing why that's important, knowing how to bring the appropriate resource to bear on the need at hand. Management is more metric. It is more measuring. It is maximizing time, energy, or people, and money. It is maximizing time, energy, and money. As the focus is, are we doing the best job we can with what we've got? How can we get more efficient, more effective? How do we measure it, et cetera? Whereas leadership is more, where are we going? They're very different. It's like apples and oranges a little bit. But let me show you how your day actually works. Now, you can prefer talking about this for an hour as compared to talking about this for an hour. Or you can prefer talking about this for an hour as compared to this. In other words, I'm not saying you can't prefer leading or managing. I'm saying the reality is you have to do both. Your day looks something like this. You come in and say, where are we going? And are we on the right track? And then you say, well, but how do we get the people? Where do we get? And how are we doing so far? And then you come back over here. And then you come back. Your conversations during the day will keep shifting between direction and management, or leadership and management. Now, the higher you go in an organization, the more you get to do what you want to do and less of what you have to do. In other words, the higher the responsibility and the more staff you get, if you say, well, I like sorting out direction. As you become president, you can spend more and more time here, but you also have to come over here and manage some, and you can spend more time here, but it doesn't mean you can abdicate and say, I'm not going to manage at all. You have to do both. But that's the way I try to integrate the concepts of leadership and management. Okay, now let's look at organizational development as a whole. That's what our session is really about. Everything else to this point has been just sort of introductory comments, okay? In developing a team, developing an organization, I had a book that some of you saw on the book table called Master Planning. What a master plan is a written statement of a group's assumptions about its direction, organization, and cash. And in the book Master Planning, I explain there are six steps in the planning process. That if you get these six steps, you've got the essence of what you need to know to build an organization. The first thing you have is direction. You have to have a clear direction for where the organization is going to go. A clear idea of what you want it to become. Once you know what direction it's supposed to go, then and only then can you really know what kind of an organization or what kind of team you need to get that done. Because if the direction you're headed is to form a basketball team or a soccer team, you need one kind of an organization. But if your direction is to form a sumo wrestling team, you need a different kind of personnel. Until you know what you want to do, you don't know who you need to have on the staff. But once you know what you're going to do, what direction you're going to head, and who's going to do it, then and only then can you know how much cash it's going to take. Because if you say, all right, put together a budget, and you say, well, what are you going to do? Well, we don't know yet. Well, how much is it going to cost? Well, we don't know because we don't know what we're going to do. Well, who's going to be on the staff? Well, we don't know yet. But put together a budget. I say, well, how many people are you going to have? We don't know. You see, you can't put together a budget until you know what you're going to do and who's going to do it. It's that sequence, okay? Now, I would suggest to you that those three steps right there are 85% of leadership from a human perspective. In other words, if you can know as a leader what your team is going to do this year, who's going to do what, and then how much it's going to cost, and put that in writing on two or three pages, you've got a master plan, a strategic plan, a business plan. You've got your plan down. And you remember what a plan is simply a written statement. As long as it's in your head, your board may not understand where you're going. Your staff may not understand where you're going. But when it's on paper, then your staff can understand where you're going and see if it's different from where they assumed you were going. your board can understand it and see if it's the same as where they want you to go, that kind of thing. So when it's written down on two or three pieces of paper, here's the direction we're headed, here are the priorities we have for the year, here's who's responsible for it in an organizational chart, and then here's our budget, here's how much it's going to cost, and that's written down, you've got a master plan, you've got a strategic plan, you've got a business plan. Now, it may not look as sophisticated as some Fortune 500 company may have it, but you've got a master plan. The question is, where do core values fit in? The core values are a part of direction. In other words, before you even start, you say, what's important to us? What's of value to us? And therefore, what are we going to do about it? Why are we here? What's our dream? What's the difference we're going to make? And then in light of that, what are we going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Yes, they're part of direction. Now, does this make sense that 85%, I've asked a lot of people much older than myself, does it make sense to you that 85% of leadership is knowing what to do next, knowing having clear direction, having the right team, and enough money? Most people say it's at least 85%, probably more. So if you are ever foggy in your thinking, and you're sitting in a coffee shop asking, where do I go from here? What's my next step as a leader for my team? Go back to DOC. Go back to, is my team right now clear on what our priorities are for the year and for the next quarter? And you say, yes, they're very clear on those. Have we got the right team? Yes, we have. Have we got the right budget we need? Well, no, we don't. Well, that's what you work on. There's whatever is missing in those three is what you work on next. Okay? Now, once you get your plan in place, which is direction, organization, and cash, a lot of people get a plan in place, they put the plan on the shelf and refer to it a year later when the board asks them, how did you do? Without the next three steps, it sets on the shelf and gathers dust. But the next thing that you need is tracking or reporting, overall evaluation for quality to make sure that you're getting done what you want to do, and then refining. Based on what you've learned this year, you go back and you refine it for next year. So basically, it goes direction, you go direction first, then organization, then cash, and then you track it, and then you evaluate it, and then based on that evaluation, you refine it, and with the refinement, you come right back to next year's direction. And over the next 30 years, at an essence level, what you do is year after year, keep clarifying, as the leader, you keep clarifying where are we headed, who's going to do it, how much is it going to cost. We track it to make sure it's on track. We evaluate it to make sure it's the quality we want. We refine it as needed, and we come right back and do it again the next year. That is the planning process at its distilled essence that I can see after 35 years of doing it. That's the essence of it. Does that make sense to you generally? That makes sense? If that makes sense generally, what I'd like to do now is go back and teach you some specific tools to help you sort out direction, organization, cash, tracking, overall evaluation, refinement as quickly as you possibly can. And just cut the fog so that you know exactly what to do at each of those steps when you go home. Okay? Let's start with direction. A high percentage of today, this morning, is going to be brand new material. A couple of things, as I've thought about it, are going to be repeats that I've covered at some session this week. You may or may not have been in that session, but I wanted to make sure that you understood this particular tool. And a repeat of it sometimes a day later helps to sort of, you see dimensions that you didn't see, or I say dimensions I didn't say, or it just sort of cements it in your thinking. So it doesn't hurt to review something, but most of what we're going to do today is new. In the direction, I'm going to cover something I covered a couple days ago, and that is, how do you get, and if I was thinking about it yesterday and today, if I had to take over your team, you decided to go on vacation to Hong Kong and left me in charge of your team, what would I do to sort out direction for the next year? And what I concluded is this is the tool I would use. And to some of you, it will look familiar, but the first thing I would do is ask, what is the difference you're trying to make? What is your dream, or what is your vision for the future? Are you trying to cover all of your country? Are you trying to see how many people come to Christ? What is your dream or vision? What do you hope happens sometime before you die or leave the organization, or the organization becomes extinct? In other words, what are you hoping to do with your life? What's your vision? The difference you're planning to make is your vision or your dream. I would get that clear. Then the second thing I would do is say, if we could only accomplish one goal, something that we need to add for the year, one new thing, what would it be? And I would make sure that the entire team agreed with that. It wasn't that one team member thought we need to go this way and another team member thought we need to go this way and the board thought we need to go a different direction. I would make sure that everyone agreed that if we could only add one thing to your team this year, it would be this one thing. So that we never lose track of our sense of direction for the year. Then I would say, what is the number one opportunity we've got to move in the direction of that goal and that dream? What is the number one opportunity that we couldn't even see 3 months ago? And if we don't grab it now, it's probably gone if we wait for 3 months. In other words, it's something that's come up that's big in the news, or it's an opportunity, or it's property available, or it's a person available. What is it that's the opportunity that if we grab it now, it will accelerate our ability to get to that goal and move toward that dream? What is the number one thing right now that could accelerate everything? Then I would look at what's the number one roadblock, the thing keeping us from getting to where we want to go. Now, let me draw you a diagram right here. Things are a function often of supply and demand. You have, let's say you have a supply of 1,000 people that would like to come to your church. And I illustrate with church, not that I think you're all pastors, but that I think you all go to church, so you'll understand an illustration in a relationship to church, but you will apply it to your ministry, whatever it is. You've got a supply of 1,000 people that would like to come to your church. Or you've got a supply of 1,000 seats in your church, rather. And you've got 1,000 people that would like to come to your church. The demand is great. 1,000 people want to come to your church, and you've got 1,000 seats in your church. The problem is you only have 34 people coming to your church. What's the problem? There is some blockage. Either they don't know about your church, or when they come to your church, they can't find parking, or when they come to your church, there are no Sunday school teachers, or when they come to your church, it's outside in the wintertime and there's no place to sit, it's just out in the field. Or what is it that's keeping this 1,000 people that want to come to your church from coming to your church? And that's your number one roadblock. If you can find what that is and open that up, then you say, well, that gets us to where there are only 700 people coming. If we open that up, now 700 people can come. And if we can solve that, if we can get this solved, then 900 people can come. And if we can get this solved, 1,000 people can come. In other words, there are certain reasons people are not responding to your ministry that would like to respond if they knew it was available or knew what you needed or something. What's the number one thing keeping them from that? That's the number one roadblock. Your team wants to discuss that and find out what's the number one thing holding our organization back from realizing its full potential. And then lastly, who is the person that is best on our team to make sure that someone keeps focused on the opportunity, the roadblock, and the goal to get us to the dream? Who is the right person? And then what percentage of their time are they free to make sure everything is happening right? And a lot of times when you identify who the person is to do these three things, they're spending less than 5% or 10% of their time on it right now because they didn't even know it was their job. They didn't even know that it was needed. They didn't even know that was the priority or that this was the priority or that this was the priority. But if I had to take over your job this year, the first thing I would establish in terms of direction, what direction are we headed? I'd say I'd make sure we had the right dream, we had the right single goal for the year, that we had someone helping us seize the right opportunity, get rid of the roadblocks, and it had the right person. It may be you or it may be someone else, making sure we drive it to the point where it actually gets done. If I had only 1 hour with you and you said to me, I'm leaving for Hong Kong, you're going to take over, what I would be asking you in terms of direction of your team for the year is right on this board right now. I'd be asking you, what's your dream? If we could only accomplish one thing, what would it be? What do you see as the number one opportunity? What do you see as the number one blockage? Who do you see can drive it? And what percentage of their time can they assign to it? And then, once you had left, I'd sit down with the team, and I'd say, now, before you left, you had told me that this was the plan. Does that plan make sense to everyone? And they say, no, there's one roadblock. This is sort of this level, but there's a much greater roadblock. And I'd listen, I'd think, you know what, I think that makes sense. And so I'd put that as the number one roadblock. In other words, I could get input, but I would start with, the bottom line is, as the leader of your department, division, or organization, or church, or ministry, you have the best understanding of what these things are. I would present them as draft one. Then I would go to my team and I would say, here is what I see What do you see that I don't see? How could we improve this? And then I would take it to the board and say, here's what our team sees. What do you see that we don't see? And when you get this settled down, you've got a very clear big picture of priorities of direction for the year. Any questions on this, just quickly? The question is, how do you know your dream isn't too fuzzy versus specific? Your dream is, first of all, directional, not measurable. It's like the North Star, which gives you a sense of direction, but it's not a destination. But it's basically the difference you hope to make sometime before you die. And you say, if I could see 1,000 people come to Christ before I die, I'd feel like my life had been served well. So instead of putting it a measurable like 1,000 people, you'd word it to see thousands of people come to Christ before I die, or hundreds of people. And so if you got there and 2 years later you'd seen 1,000, you still got thousands to go. And so it's, you don't put your dream in measurable terms, you put it in to see hundreds of people come to Christ, or thousands of people come to Christ, or millions of people come to Christ, or raise millions of dollars, or billions of dollars, whatever you're trying to do, so that you never run out of it. It's like you never get there. Because some people say, I'd like to make $1 million. And they work hard for 30 years and to make $1 million. Once they get to $1 million, they think, now what do I do? It's like, I've lost all sense of direction, because I was clear, that's where I'm going. But if it's measurable and you get there, it's like, now what do I do? And so by putting it in non-measurable terms, you never run out of it. You can grow into it for 30 years. And it may turn out to be 3 times the size you'd hoped or half the size you'd hoped, but you're moving in the right direction. Any other quick questions? We've covered this, so I didn't expect a lot of questions, but again, it may be new to some of you, but this right here is a real important tool for you to see. Now, the next section is organization. Many of you are what I would call... Let me back up. One of the most fundamental tools to have in developing an organization is an organizational chart. When I go into an organization, I often ask, could I see a copy of your organizational chart? I say, do you have an organizational chart? Oh, of course. I say, may I see a copy of it? Well, see, where was that? Hazel, do you remember where we put that organization? About a year ago, we had one. Where is it? Well, I'm sorry, I can't find it right now, but we can find it soon. I mean, it's like the organizational chart is seen as something we must do once, and then we forget it forever. Wrong. Your organizational chart is the key to building your future organization. It's like, how could you have a football team without understanding what the positions are? You say, oh, just go play football. No, you can't just go out on the field and play football. You have to know what position you've got. And there's a very fundamental organizational structure that fits about 99.9% of organizations that I'd like to draw for you. You can adapt it to your own purposes, but I'll show you the essence of it. First of all, you have a president. They can be called senior pastor, they can be called executive managing director, they can be called a variety of things, but let's call it, you've got a president. Depending on the president's personality, you've got either a board of directors, which you would draw here, like this, or an advisory board, which you would draw over here. This is a board of directors. This is an advisory board. And this is almost a dotted line. In other words, I don't report to these people, but they're advisors to me. Depending on the personality, if you're the founder, you may want a board of directors, or you may want an advisory board. Now, here's a word of warning. Do not have two boards in one organization. In other words, do not have a board of directors and an advisory board. A lot of people have a board of directors and an advisory board. They get confused. The advisory board thinks they're the board of directors, and it leads to confusion and congestion. So what you want to have, if you're going to have both, you want a board of directors and an advisory council. If you call it an advisory council, they know they're advisors, not the directors. It's just a simple clarification, okay? But depending on which you do, let's just call this the senior executive, whether it's the executive pastor, whether it's the presidential, the senior pastor, or the president, or whatever it is. Let's call it the senior executive. Next, you have, some groups have an executive pastor or an executive vice president. This would be the person that the rest of the team reports to. When you have an executive vice president or an executive pastor, there are two, this is a little bit complicated, but you typically have administrative services, which is your accounting, facilities, bookkeeping, or your accounting and bookkeeping, facilities, HR, human resources, IT, computers, etc. You have those kind of things here. And then over here you have communication services, which is marketing, fundraising, public relations, internet. This is your communications over here. And marketing, let me give you, this isn't absolute or anything, it's just the way I keep track of it in my mind. Marketing is selling something. It's like marketing a book, marketing a seminar, it's selling tickets, it's marketing something. You may not have marketing in your company. You may not need to sell anything. Fundraising is asking. Fundraising is saying, will you give me some money? Marketing is, if you'll give me $10, I'll give you a book. Fundraising is saying, if you'll give me $10, I won't give you anything back except a thank you, but I'll use that $10 to help someone else. It's asking for help to help others. Whereas public relations is telling. It's simply telling the story. It's magazine articles and television interviews, and it's just telling your story. And then the internet is basically basic communication, and it's basically your list. It's keeping track of who are the people that you want to keep track of to make sure that you've got a list that you can communicate to them what you need to. Let me tell you a conclusion I reached the other day. It was a few months ago, and I was just sitting, thinking, reflecting on things, and my conclusion was the internet is the future. I would say whatever budget you're putting into, whatever percentage of your budget you're putting into developing your website and your communications on the internet with people globally, other people in the European Leadership Forum, etc., whatever percentage, let's say you're putting 1% of your budget into internet development, I would encourage you at this point in history, whatever percentage you're putting in, double that this year. Because people judge you based on your internet site. When they want to visit your church, they will visit your internet site to see what time your services are. At least in America. They may not in some of your countries, I don't know. But I'm saying consider the fact that the internet is the way that you and I will keep in touch. It's the way that we don't even have a home phone anymore. We don't have a home phone. We have cell phones, but we have cell phones we carry around, but we certainly don't have landlines anymore. We rarely send letters. We used to go through a stack of letterheads, a ream a month or a ream every 2 months or something with memos and letters and stuff. One ream of letterheads will last us 3 years. 4 years, 5 years. We just don't use letterheads anymore. It's all email. And I'm saying the better you get at understanding the internet, the better off you are. Okay, I'm not gonna stay on any of these topics too long because we don't have too much time together this morning because I want to cover a lot of things. And then down here, you have what I would call your prophet centers or your ministry centers, illustrating in a church, I don't care what you call them, you have certain functions in a church. You have Christian education, which is basically how do we educate, disciple, train people. You've got missions and outreach, which is home missions in your community outreach, et cetera, your international missions, et cetera. You've got your pastoral care, which is your counseling and home groups that are more supportive in nature, et cetera. And then you have your worship and music. And pastoral care includes like weddings and stuff like that. You can literally draw an organizational chart. I've seen people draw them upside down to show servant leadership. I've seen them draw them sideways to show dynamic leadership. But as you show your organizational chart to a board member who is in business or a donor who is in business, all of that is understood here, meaning he who would be the greatest of all would be the servant of all. That your servanthood starts here and is to serve here. It isn't that the servants start here serving this, it's that this is a servant starting here. Now, let me show you one other thing. I want you to imagine you're driving along in your automobile on the Autobahn at 150 miles an hour. Just cruising along at 150 miles per hour. And the steering wheel comes off in your hand. You can sort of imagine what that feels like, can't you? Like that? Pardon? Yeah. Right here is the steering mechanism of an organization. The board, the senior executive, the executive vice president, the advisor are the steering mechanism. Now, imagine your steering wheel is great, but you come along at 150 and you start to come to a fairly sharp turn and you put your foot down and your foot goes clear to the floor. There's no brake. You can get a feel what that is. Administrative services is not the brake, but it is the monitor that tells the president when it's time to brake. So this is, in essence, the metrics or the numbers and all that that tell the leadership where we are to know if it's time to put on the brakes or if it's time to accelerate.
Yes.
For administrative services, you have things like accounting and bookkeeping, facilities, human resources, the computer services, those kind of things, equipment, etc. Now, let's imagine your steering wheel holds, your brakes are good, you're going along at 150, you look at your fuel gauge and it's below zero, below empty. All of a sudden, sput, 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 and you coast to the side over by beside the road. What have you got? You've got a comfortable, very expensive chair. Okay? Your communications is what gives you gas, meaning it brings you money which runs the organization. If you don't have someone in your organization in charge of, primarily responsible for, communications, why is it such a mystery to you that you're short on money? If you're not telling your story, how are people going to know about you to give you money? Now, I want you to imagine your steering is good, your brakes are good, your fuel tank is full, you stop to eat at a little cafe, stop for a cup of cappuccino or something, you get back in, and it turns out that someone has replaced your Ferrari engine with a tiny Volkswagen engine. And you try to get up to 150 miles an hour, and you just can't get there from here. This is the engine of your organization right here. What moves the car forward fast are actually your services. If you have a Ferrari with no engine in it, you've got trouble. Questions about this, because I don't want to linger here. We're going to have a lot of time for Q&A for general later, but is there any quick questions on this? Yeah. The question was, the majority of our organizations are small. We don't have this kind of thing. Let me suggest this thought to you. I want you to imagine whatever your organization is today at its full-blown development 50 years from now. It may have a staff of 300 people. All of their names are in a box of some kind. Do you realize today you have the same organization? The only difference is your name is in all the boxes. Right today, all of you have this. The problem is your name is in all the boxes. What you want to be careful, and the reason you want to draw this, let me tell you why you want to draw it. If, let's say, for example, you're here and you find someone that starts coming to church that would like to teach senior citizens down here, teach a senior citizen Sunday school class. And it's just the two of you. And so you say, would you like to come and teach a senior citizen Sunday school class? They say, oh yeah, I'll be happy to. Say, great, the two of us are going to build this church. Then when it's time to get a Christian education director, they're going to feel they've been demoted because someone's been put between you and them. And then when you get an executive pastor, they're going to feel demoted again. But if you say, right now, here is what will be someday, and my name is in here, and my name is in here, and my name is in here, and 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 here. But if you could take that, it would be very helpful to me. But someday we'll get someone to be over all of this. Then when you get someone, you go to them and say, I've got good news. Remember when I told you someday we get someone to give overall coordinate? We finally found the person. It's good news. Instead of you've just been demoted to, because it feels to them like it's us, the two of us are building this church. And every time someone else comes in, it feels like I'm going down and down and down and down and down. So I would encourage you, even though you're small, build, draw out the organization that you would dream of having. Go ahead and put your name in all the boxes. And then when you approach someone, say, you know, I am really thankful that you started attending the church, becoming a part of the ministry, etc. Right now, I just feel so overloaded. I'm trying to do so many things. Would you be open to helping me? Now, we have lots of open boxes. So you don't have to say, would you do this? You say, we have lots of open boxes. If you could help in any way you wanted to, how would you want to help? Oh, I'd want to teach senior citizens. Okay, great. Could I put your name in that box? Okay, we've got about 10 minutes before the next break. Let me show you how to, one other thing in terms of building a team. I'd like to have you write down on your paper the first names of everyone reporting directly to you. And if you have a board that you report to, what are the names of your board members? And include your name on the list. So you've got whoever you report to, your name, and your staff's name, the people that report to you on that list. Just make a list, just first names. You're not going to be asked to turn it in or report it or anything, but I want to have you get a feel for the names of the people that you're relating to on a regular basis. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is, this is the right person in the right place for long term, meaning the next 2 to 5 years, this is the ideal person, is a 10. 1 is, they should have been fired a long time ago. I don't know how to get rid of them. Okay? 10 is really bad, 1 is really good. Or, I'm sorry, 10 is really good, 1 is really bad. Okay? I'm going to give you 1 minute to evaluate all of them. Give them all a 1 to 10 rating starting now. You knew probably in 15 seconds exactly who was doing what they were supposed to do and who weren't, who the ideal people were and who the ideal people were not. I would encourage you as a leader sitting in this room, trust your instincts. You know who's doing what they're supposed to and who isn't. You don't have to go through a 7-month process to decide. 15 seconds usually does it. Now, let me explain what those numbers mean. Anyone you rated, 0 to 5 is red. Red. 0 to 5 is red. Zero to five equals red. 6 or 7 equals yellow. 8, 9, 10 equals green. Now, what you do with your reds, and by the way, this applies to your board of directors, it applies to your whoever you report to, it applies to you, it applies to your, you can apply it to your colleagues, your peers, you can apply it to all those who report to you, whether they're paid or unpaid. You can rate your unpaid team members, what you might call volunteers, I'd call them team members that are unpaid, you can rate anyone you're working with on this 1 to 10 scale. And when you, and again, you can come to the, your rating in less than a minute typically. I've rarely had a senior executive take a minute to rate everyone that reports to him or her. When you get to a red, anyone you rate 0 to 5, you need to do one of three things. Either redefine what they're doing. In other words, you may have asked them to do way too much, and you think, you know what, realistically, I've put them in over their head. I've just asked them too much. So redefine and lower what you've asked them to do. Redefine. Or you may say, you know, no, I've asked them to do what, I mean, what I've asked them to do is very realistic for that position, what I'm paying them or what needs to be done. Then secondly, reassign. You may say, the person that's in this department or this responsibility may be very good over here, they're just not good over there. You can reassign them within the within your organization. And if you say, no, there's no place else they can work, then the third thing is you release them from your organization. Let me show you how to release someone from your staff in a Christian way. And it sounds funny, but it isn't. I've seen a lot of people released from Christian organizations in very un-Christian ways. But there is a Christian way to do it, from my perspective, that you can use for the rest of your life. Paid, unpaid, board members, staff members, whatever. And it's what I call the leadership star. It has 5 words to it. Care, honest, fair, strength, and stress. And here's how it goes. Zingo, anyone that rates 0 to 5, you wait for the humane timing. Not the day before Christmas, not the day before their son or daughter gets married. You wait till there's a humane timing. Be careful of that. And then you sit down with them and you say, Zingo, I care far too much about you not to be honest with you. Now, here's a word of warning. If you wait too long for this conversation and you're too frustrated with what they're not doing, you'll begin to not care at all. Even as a Christian, you'll feel like, I just want them out of here. I don't care how it happens. I just want them gone. And that's a bad position to be in from a Christian perspective. You want to release them before you get that frustrated with them. So you can honestly say to them, I care far too much about you not to be honest with you. In fairness to you and your future, your future is not here. Now, let me ask you a quick question. If whoever you report to, your board or your manager or whoever you report to, came to me yesterday and said, by the way, they're not going to be with me a year from now. I knew you weren't going to be where you are a year from now, but you didn't. When would you want to know that? Right now. Why? So you can get on thinking about, what else am I going to do? If you know that the person on your staff that rates 2 or 3 isn't going to be with you long term, when is the fairest time to tell them? As soon as humanely possible. I care far too much about you not to be honest with you. In fairness to you and your future is not here. That's what you would want someone to do to you. It's doing unto them what you'd want them to do to you. And then you come down here and you say, you know, you have tremendous strength. And you want to think about this before your meeting and make a list of what you see their strengths to be. And you may think, well, if they're that strong, why am I releasing them? Because their strength isn't what you need in this position. They may be able to dunk a basketball from the free throw line, but they can't add two and two together to keep your accounting books, which you're asking them to do. So you basically say, last night I was thinking about it, or I've been thinking about it for a week or so, and you have a lot of strengths, and your strengths that I see are these. As a matter of fact, I've concluded your number one strength is dunking a basketball. Now, why is this important? A lot of times when even Christians release people from a position, all they do is tell them what they've done wrong and ask for their keys and send them out only thinking, I'm a failure. I don't have any strengths. I say, no. The person has strengths. It's just that their strength isn't matching for what you need right now. And then to say stress, you say, and I've been watching you over the last while, and you, every time you get in one of these two or three kind of situations or four kind of situations, particularly this one, I notice it seems like your blood pressure goes up. You seem to get frustrated. You seem to get tense. I cannot leave you in this position where you know what we're expecting of you. You just aren't getting it done. And it puts you under tremendous pressure and stress. I can't leave you in this stressful position. Now, if you haven't made clear what you want them to do, no wonder they're not doing it. You need to make clear what you want done, and if they're not doing it, they're feeling stressed because they can't do it. And so say, I cannot leave you in a position where you're feeling this kind of stress. So I'm going to release you to find where you can find where this strength fits. Now, occasionally, when you tell them this, the person will say, well, I'm not feeling stressed. Yes, but you're stressing everyone around you. Okay. But that's how you release someone in a Christian way. Okay? Does that make sense to everyone? Okay. If it's yellow, you want to turn them either red or green. So what you do is you give them three measurable priorities for 30 days. You say, here is the three things that are measurable I want you to get done in the next 30 days. Here are the three things I want you to get done in the next 60 days. And here are the three things I want you to get done in the next 90 days. Make that list up and sit down with them and say, I want to make clear, here's what your job really is here. Now, when you give them that list, what you're going to find is one of two reactions. Some people say, is this what I'm supposed to do? I hadn't understood this. I can do this. It's no problem. I'll be happy to do it. They do it. They turn bright green. It was just a matter of miscommunication. But half the people that you show it to or more will say, is this what you're expecting me to do? I can't do this. If this is what you're expecting me to do, I may as well resign now. Here is where you have to resist the temptation of becoming supportive. You say, no, I wasn't talking about resigning or anything. No, just relax. No, I'm just talking about just clarifying, maybe we don't have to do quite this much. No, resist that. When they say, if that's what you want me to do, I may as well resign now. You say, well, if that seems too much for you, if that seems overwhelming to you, let's just start planning for your transition, because I care far too much about you not to be honest with you. In fairness to you, if this seems overwhelming, your future is not here. You've got tremendous strengths, but if this is stressful for you, if even thinking about being responsible to do this is stressful for you, we need to release you to find out where your strength can be used better somewhere else. The question is, the three things you're asking them to do, do they have specific timelines? Yes. These three things have to be done in the next 30 days. They have to be done in the next 30 days. These have to be done in the next 60 days. These have to be done. Not started and done sometimes 3 years from now. But they need, in other words, you need to be very specific and give them very short-term assignments that if they can do those, then you reevaluate. But if they can't get those done, anyone that you rated 8, 9, or 10 is the right person for your team. they're the right board member, the right staff member, etc. If you rate them 8, 9, or 10, often what we do is we say, ask, are we getting our money's worth? If we're paying them $30,000 a year, are we getting $90,000 worth of value? Are we getting 3 times what we're paying them in value? That's the wrong question. The right question is, how do I maximize this unique person? Everyone who is 7, 8, or 8, 9, or 10, you should be asking the question on a regular basis, how do I maximize this unique person? And what I mean by that is ask, of all the things this person does well, what do they do best? And are they doing that at least 60% of their time ideally? That's the way to maximize them, is to use them in the area of their greatest strength. Okay? Now, a quick question. We're just about done. We've got 1 minute left. If you're new to the organization, how long do you take to observe? 1 day. But you don't tell anyone. At the end of the week, you do it again, but you don't tell anyone. And at the end of the month, you do it again, but you don't tell anyone. At the end of the month, you'll know. But sometimes at the end of the first day, you think someone is really weak. But at 6, 7 days, you think, hey, this person is stronger than I thought. But at the end of 30 days, if you watch them carefully, you can pretty well know.